Genau, ich habe jetzt schon mal auf Play gedrückt. You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Break on through to the other side.
I would like to buy a hamburger.
I would like to buy a hamburger.
I would like to buy a hamburger.
You would like to buy a hamburger.
It's not Damburger, hamburger.
I'm not saying Damburger.
Maybe we should stop.
We don't quit. We do not quit. Again, again.
Welcome to the other side.
Hey, salut Yannick.
Salut Thibaut.
Also, im Programmheft heute Klingelingeling und Brrr. Auch bekannt als die Zeit zwischen den Jahren, während Sie Ihr Festessen noch verdauen und Ihnen die traditionellen Familienstreitigkeiten schwer im Magen liegen, servieren wir Ihnen einen super Cocktail, das Beste vom Jahr, das Destillat aus unseren Ausflügen auf der anderen Seite.
Aber hallo, wir hören den Videospiel-Soundtrack-Komponisten Tommy Tallarico, ein Kerl, der noch irrer ist als wir, ein Kerl, der Beethoven liebt und Super Mario. Tallaricos Interview heute in seiner Originalsprache Englisch. Übersetzt hatten wir es im April, kann man natürlich auch nochmal hören auf der Webseite, aber auf Englisch, da ist es einfach beeindruckender.
Andere Programmpunkte kreuz und quer gedroppt, das Januar-Zapping, Möbelbauen mit Lisa und ein Porträt aus Santorini. Ach, fangen wir damit doch gleich an. Ausnahmsweise beginnen wir heute mit der Abschlussbetrachtung von Isabel Schlegel, der Weltensurferin, die uns Menschen und ihre YouTube-Blase vorstellt.
Und wir hier in unserer kleinen Blase, die wir die andere Seite getauft haben, wir haben zerschlissene Jeans und Marienkäfer auf der Brust.
Und wir drücken auf den Knopf. Auf geht's, Yannick. Auf geht's in Richtung The Other Side.
Willkommen auf der anderen Seite.
So, hey, I got this kick-ass new flat screen.
Für die Unterhaltungssendungen am Samstag zu erleben sind jede Menge Kaktusblüten und Paradiesvögel, was das auch immer sein mag.
Schauen Sie mal hier.
You get what I call a filter bubble.
Me all you love now.
Wanna see?
Paulina studiert heute in Polen. Doch bis zu ihrem Abitur lebte sie auf der kleinen griechischen Insel Santorini. Nicht als Urlauber, sondern als Local. Wie ist es für junge Leute auf der Insel zu leben? Und vor allem, wie verbringen sie diese heißen, endlosen Tage und Nächte des Sommers? Mithilfe einiger YouTube-Videos nimmt sie uns heute mit in ihre Zeit vor dem Studium.
My name is Paulina Węglarz. I'm Polish. I grew up though in Greece. I was born there, finished my studies there, and now since 2 years I'm studying in Poznań because I already knew back then that I wanted to attend a university in Poland. I did not even think for 5 minutes that I'm gonna apply to university in Greece, because back then when I was actually the 3 years of my high school were the 3 years of this severe economical crisis. And I could not imagine for a young person to build their future over there, especially for a person who's not Greek. And I'm not saying that there is a racist thing, no, just especially for someone who comes from the outside, it's so hard to get a job at the same time when a Greek person cannot find it. That was one reason, but the other reason was also because when you grow up on an island in Greece, it's different than growing up, for example, in a big city like Athens or Thessaloniki. When I was starting high school, I wanted to like do other things rather than just stay in class and do my homework. Apart from the university, things that you can do in your free time, there was no such possibility there. You can simply not find it on an island, but I don't think because of the mentality, but because of the fact that an island is small. It cannot provide all these things to all its citizens. Sakis Ourvas, he's a really famous Greek singer, and actually people say that okay, that the Greek people say, came from this Ola Kala, which means everything okay. So that it derived from the Greek language. Where I grew up in a Polish house, even though I was in Greece, we celebrated all our Christmas and other smaller celebrations like in Poland, because there were also a few other Polish people on the island. And I also had this cable TV, the Polish cable TV at home. So every show, every like music video or things that people at my age back in Poland were into, I could follow that, maybe not 100%, but I knew what was going on.
Kiedy patrzę tak na ciebie, jesteś fajna, aj. Dla mnie masz daj.
styla. Kiedy łączy nas noc supalna, aj. Dla mnie ma styla. Kiedy patrzę tak na ciebie, jesteś fajna, aj. Dla mnie ma styla. Kiedy łączy nas noc supalna, aj. N-U-L-L-O, wy macie styla.
Nie pytaj, czy to najpierw czy klub. Tu piwości nas znów. Siedzimy tu i popatrzymy na sztuki. Choć patrzę na nią, stworzony do dominacji.
Since Santorini actually comes live from April until like October, because these are the months that the most tourists come, and these are the months when the weather is really good for the beach bars to open. A summer day, right? You go to the beach at 2 o'clock, not earlier because it's super hot. You stay there from 2 to 6 or 7. Then you go back home, you take a shower and you eat at 9:30, 10. You go out for a coffee, and then you either are already dressed to go to the club or just go back home, get dressed, and at 1:30 you go to the club, and you come back at like 5 or something, and then you go to sleep, and again, at 2 o'clock to the beach.
Αφήνω πίσω στην καρδιά μου δυο πληγωμένα σ' αγαπώ. Κοντά σου έρχομαι καρδιά μου και περιμένω να σωθώ. Κοντά σου έρχομαι καρδιά μου και περιμένω να σωθώ. Αφήνω πίσω στην καρδιά μου δυο πληγωμένα σ' αγαπώ. Μου λες δεν γίνεται να ξαναείμαστε μαζί πως αποφιλείται.
Actually the song is called Γίνεται, which means it can happen, it's doable. So you know when a woman says like, no, we cannot be together, and he says like, with just one kiss everything can happen. When they were playing it in a club or at a beach bar, everybody knew the song and everybody started like clapping and dancing. And when I hear that music, it reminds me of this year's summer in Santorini.
Das waren die Erdmöbel, die gemeinsam mit Maren Eggert La 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 Lametta Sa 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 sangen. Ey, du hast im Haar Lametta. Gut, dass du's dazu sagst.
Man kann dich ja jetzt leider nicht sehen. Das ist im Radio manchmal so.
Videospiele geben uns Fähigkeiten, die wir nicht haben. Skateboardfahren zum Beispiel. Auch Menschen, die in ihrem Leben vorher noch nie auf einem schmalen Brett standen, können es auf dem Bildschirm recht schnell lernen. Und wenn sie doch fallen, dann tut das nicht weh. Höchstens dem eigenen Ego. Weh tun sich die anderen. Tommy Tallarico zum Beispiel. Tommy Tallarico kümmert sich um den Sound der Spiele, Musik und Geräusche. Wenn man im populärsten Skateboard-Videospiel Tony Hawk Pro Skater auf den Asphalt fällt, dann hört man das. Man hört's, weil Tallarico es aufgenommen hat, als er auf den Asphalt krachte.
Tommy Tallarico, guten Tag.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
So, you're a composer for video games, and when we think of video games and music, most of us probably will have a melody, a music inside their head. Mm-hmm. So before we start talking about your music, could you please hum what's inside your mind right now?
Do 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 do. I'm a short Italian, so I always have the music to Mario going through my head.
So in an interview, you said that you wanted people to still hearing the music even after they stopped playing. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to do as a composer to make that happen?
Well, as a composer, I think the most important part of writing is the melody. You know, there's melody and then there's dynamics is also very important. But I think melody is the most strong thing. And that's why we still listen to Beethoven 250 years later, you know, a good German composer, because of that melody, you know, whether da 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 da, you know, whether it's that or if it's ah. So Beethoven's Ninth or Halo, it's all got a great melody that you can hum back, And that's the most important thing, to getting people to continue listening.
You often state in your interviews that Beethoven would have composed video game music.
Absolutely.
That's what you say all the time. What would you have composed if you were living in the age of Beethoven?
That's a great question. Probably an Italian opera. Yeah.
An Italian opera.
In fact, there was a game that I worked on called Advent Rising, which wasn't a very big commercial success, but we wrote a whole Italian opera for the game. So I recommend people checking out the music to Advent Rising. You can, you know, probably get it on YouTube. And actually, the game soundtrack sold more copies than the game itself did. Yeah, an Italian opera. That's what I'd be doing.
Well, unfortunately, you couldn't practice with Beethoven at that time. But at a very young age, you were composing your own skills. For example, you were recording mixtapes, I read, for your friends. And you were like charging 5 cents for the thing. And you were playing the guitar to it. And on the internet, there's one video I saw that there was a link in a Reddit, like Ask Me Anything, where you sit in front of a PC and you were playing that old Monty Python PC game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You have like a crazy haircut and stuff.
Yeah, the 80s.
And you were referring to you as a future rock star. What was that time like for you?
Yeah, so that's a really crazy video, because the way I got... the way I became into the video game industry is when I turned 21. Well, my two greatest loves growing up were always video games and music. But I never thought to ever put the two together, because there was no such thing as a video game composer back in the 80s and 70s. So when I turned 21, I left my parents crying on a doorstep, and my younger brother. And I left home all by myself. I got a little two-seater car. And I just drove out to California, which was 3,000 miles away, all the way across the country. And I had no job, no place to stay, no money, no friends, nothing. I just showed up in California. And I was actually homeless for the first 3 weeks that I was in California. And but the first day I was out, I was sleeping under a pier at the beach. And the first day I got there, I opened up a newspaper and I saw a job for selling keyboards at a guitar shop. So I went down there and I got the job right away. And they told me to start tomorrow. So the next day I started, I had a video game t-shirt on. It was for a brand new system that was just coming out. It'd come out in Japan already. It was the TurboGrafx-16. And back then, no one had video game t-shirts. They didn't, you know, it's not, they're all over the place now. You can buy them. But back then, it was very rare because I was really into games. And the very first person who walked in, the first customer I waited on, was a producer at Virgin, Richard Branson's company. And they were starting a video game company right down the street. And he saw my t-shirt. And he said, oh my gosh, you know about video games? That's like a Japanese system that hasn't even come out yet. I said, I know everything about video games. He said, well, do you want a job? I said, absolutely. Doing what? They're like, you play video games for us and tell us what's wrong with them. And we'll pay you $5 an hour. Oh my God. You know, to me. So I was in California 3 days and I was in the video game industry. So that video, and then what I would do is I would bug the vice president of the company every single day. I said, come on, let me do music. You know, I'll do it for free. If you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. You know, just at least give me the chance and the opportunity. And the very first game that we were developing in-house there, one of the first games, was the original Prince of Persia with Jordan Mechner. And that was, and they gave me the opportunity to do the music. And, you know, I won an award for it. So they ended up making me the music guy. But that video that you're referring to was before I had done any music at all. So you saw me playing the Monty Python game because I was a games tester still. So yeah, that's a little, and the guy who was recording it was the vice president of the company.
No kidding.
Who I kept asking every day, please, please. So, you know, that was my thing. Hey, future rock star here. You know, I was trying to tell him that, you know, hey, give me a chance for music. Yeah. So it's actually a pretty historic video for my life and my career. His name was Doc. He was a doctor, Dr. Stephen Clark Wilson. And, he posted that a couple of years ago. He goes, I was going through some old tapes and you'll never believe what I found. So yeah, it's kind of cool.
So that was the time when you invented video game composer as a job. what made them offer you this job, and how could you create a job out of nothing, a job which now permits you to live?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question because, you know, like I said earlier, back then there was no such thing as a video game composer. And so you had to be a video game programmer. You had to be a game programmer in order to, you know, do music for games. And so what I did is I sat down with the programmers and I would try to understand the systems, and each system has a sound chip in it. And so what I would do is I would tell them to take my keyboard, my electronic keyboard, and it has a thing called MIDI, which is where you could, you know, daisy chain different keyboards together, but you could also use it to play other systems. And so they would create cartridges for me where I could plug right into the cartridge and I could play the sound chip right on the system. And then music sequencers were just coming out then, where it took that MIDI data and it recorded it onto a computer. So I would have my MIDI keyboard hooked right into the chip, the sound chip of the system, which then looped back into the computer, where I could record what I was playing, the data, the, you know, all of the, it would turn it into zeros and ones. And then I would give that information to the programmers. So it was very different way of doing it.
Sounds easy.
Yeah. Very simple back then. Yeah. No, it was absolute nightmare. And, and of course we would get this, basically I'd write a song and I'd get a paragraph of numbers back.
Yeah.
And then I'd have to go in and just hand tweak the numbers, because the numbers represented the note I hit and the length that I would hit it for, and then the amount of space until I hit the next note. That was, we didn't even have velocity, we didn't even have, you know, volume. It was just that. And and so I would go in and then I'd start tweaking numbers by hand.
What was your music rate in school like?
What was my, sorry?
The grade you had in music.
Oh, I never took music in school. Not a single time. No, I went to a Catholic school and they didn't have music courses at all. So growing up, I never had music. But I always say that my music studies and my music teacher was Beethoven, because that's who I listened to growing up. And I was able to, I could listen to something and I would try to figure it out on the piano or guitar. And I come from a very musical family. And so there was always music around. I have a very famous cousin who's a rock star. So I would go to his shows.
By Aerosmith?
Yes. Yes. Steven Tyler. Yes. From Aerosmith. His real name is Steven Tellerico. And so when I was, you know, 8 years old, you know, they'd always put the family up right at the side of the stage. And so I'd see Cousin Steven. I just knew him as Cousin Steven. And I'd see him perform for, you know, 30,000 people. And I would watch him do that. And I'd be, as a young boy, I remember thinking, oh, that's a cool job. That's what I want to do when I grow up. You know, it never seemed to me like it was an impossible dream. It was just like, oh, this is something our family does. This is cool. Yeah, he's having fun out there. That's what I want. You know, so that's, you know, I always say that was the biggest gift he ever gave to me, was confidence, and, you know, not ever thinking that that was impossible. But yeah, so when I was growing up, I would listen to Aerosmith, and I'd try to figure out what Joe Perry was doing on the guitar. Then when Van Halen came out in the late 70s, I would learn all of Eddie's, you know, thing, Led Zeppelin, you know, think Pink Floyd, things like that. And and so that's how I was taught by the masters, because I would listen to see what they would do. I'd pick it apart. Like when you listen to Beethoven's Ninth, I mean, if you really sit down and pay attention to it, like, and really listen to all of the different instruments and what they're doing, it's mind-blowing. Still to this day, hundreds of years later, mind-blowing. I go back and listen to it tonight, or play a clip of it right now, just 30 seconds, you know, when it goes, and the woodwinds and the cellos and the violins and how they're working with the choir. And I mean, it's just everything's doing their own thing, but together it makes this, you know, perfect piece of music. And so by learning all these different parts on the piano, that's how I learned how to write music. Or by, you know, listening to Van Halen or Led Zeppelin and watching the chord changes and go, oh, wow, look how we went from there to there. And so when I play, like when you see me play on stage tonight, when I'm playing guitar, you know, there's a lot of influences by, you know, Jimmy Page and Eddie Van Halen and Joe Perry. And when I write music, it's very heavily influenced by that melodic, you know, John Williams and Beethoven and, you know, kind of my orchestral heroes.
Of course.
So composing music, we're coming back to this. And you described how you composed the first video games music. So you were sitting right next to the programmers, plugging mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. your keyboard into their system. Is it still working like that?
Somewhat, yeah. I mean, you don't need to sit next to a programmer anymore. But yes, the systems that they've built. I mean, what happened is in the mid 90s, when CD-ROMs became available as a storage medium, we didn't have to plug into anything anymore. You know, we could make our own music and record it, and then have that be what you're hearing in the background of the game. So you don't need to really plug in. And now they've built these tools for musicians where they can sit in their studio and it can all be completely interactive. So you can write music, like you could record a symphony in, you know, five or six different arrangements, you know. Okay, now let's do it without the drums. Now let's do 16th notes instead of 8th notes. And, you know, so you can record different stems and start layering things all at once. And the musician, the composer can put that into these systems and then just hand something to a programmer that says, okay, when there's 100 guys attacking you, play this song. And then when there's 40 guys attacking you, then play this version of the song. And you can program in there yourself like a 7-second crossfade in between the music. So it's all like interactive stuff, and you just need to tell the programmer what's happening. So again, in the old days, you had to sit there with the programmer and really program that by hand. But now it's just a package.
So I talked to a silent movie piano player. Mm-hmm. And he told me how he is composing, or how he's inventing the music. So he sees the images, he's mm-hmm. rewinding, going mm-hmm. back and forth, and developing the music step by step. And he's always referring to the images he's seeing. Is it how you work too?
Exactly, yeah. Actually, a funny, interesting thing about silent film and the whole advent of music in films. The reason they used to have piano players, and this is in the 19-teens and 1920s when films first started, the projectors, the actual film projectors, were so loud. During the, you know, as this film's playing. Of course, they had no sound to any of the films, no talking, you had to read. And it was so loud that it was disturbing to people. So the theater owners would hire people to come in and play the piano, and they'd say, look, watch the film live as they're watching it and play something so that these darn projectors aren't so loud and people can focus on that. That's how soundtracks for movies were invented. But yes, to answer your question, absolutely. To me, I just play a video game. Sometimes they'll give me storyboards and say, oh, this is what the planet looks like, or this is what the scene looks like. But for me, I want to know not only what the environment is, but I want to know what the emotion is. That, to me, are we being chased or are we chasing somebody? Did we just lose a friend or did we just finish a battle? Are we in battle or are we really scared because there's something that might jump out on us, you know? So what I'll do is I really want a description of this scene, but in a perfect world, yeah, I just play it. I just play it and I play it over and over until something pops into my head. And then I run over to the piano and start figuring out what's in my head.
Well, we're talking about films. Do you know the film Boyhood?
I don't, unfortunately. It's one of the ones on my list to see. I haven't seen Whiplash either yet. Mm-hmm. That's another, musician one that I can't
wait
to
see. It's on your
list. It's on my list.
So the movie, Boyhood, he tells a story about the coming of age of a young boy. And in the movie, we hear music that we can relate to, music that marked our ways of my generation, for example. Mm-hmm. And the director of the movie, Richard Linklater, he quoted on the music, "Everything in the movie is attached to something real. I wanted the same with the music. Mm-hmm. Songs that somebody somewhere had an emotional experience with." Would you agree on that statement for your music as well?
Absolutely. I mean, people ask me all over the world what makes video game music so special and why I can go anywhere in the world and put on a show for the first time like we are tonight here in Munich. And it's a sold out show, 2,000 people coming to see classical music, symphonic music. And they say, "What? Why is that?" And I'll tell you why. When you play a video game, you become that character. And the music becomes the soundtrack of your life. That's very different than watching a film. When you watch Raiders of the Lost Ark and you hear that theme, dun, 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 that's Indiana Jones's theme. It's not your theme. It's Indiana Jones's theme. When you watch Star Wars and Darth Vader comes in, dun, 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 that's Darth Vader's theme. You're watching somebody else's story. But when you play a video game, you're moving that character. You become that character. When you're battling and saving your village from 100 people on horseback with swords, and that music is playing, that becomes your music. When you go on a 6-hour quest and finally find the treasure box and open it up and there's a song that happens, that becomes your victory tune for the rest of the day, you know, and you've earned that for hours and hours and sometimes days and days. So music in video games is like no other music ever written in the history of the world, where somebody is experiencing this for themselves and it is their soundtrack of their lives while they're inside that game. So that's why people are so emotionally attached. There will be people in the audience tonight in tears, crying when we play things like Zelda or Kingdom Hearts or Final Fantasy. We're gonna snap them back to their childhood with only a few notes. And they're going to remember being in that room, in that exact room when they first played it or first heard it. It's really profound. And people don't, think about it. They're like, oh, video game music, it's a bunch of bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bloop. You know, but for people who play video games, there's that music is special. It's a part of their childhood. It's a part of their lives.
So does this mean that music is always less profound if it's not referring to images?
No, not at all. In fact, the opposite. The opposite is that, and that's why I always say that if Beethoven were alive, he'd be a video game composer. Because, Beethoven wanted to create these memories. He wanted to control people's minds, basically, be able to control somebody's emotional state through music is very important. And that's exactly what's happening when you in a video game. If you're in a dark room and in a video game, depending on what I write is what your experience is going to be, your emotional experience. If I'm writing something scary, you're going to be like, uh-oh, something's going to jump out at me. But if I'm writing something that's mysterious, you're like, oh, I better look around for a key. you know. But when you play the music, so getting that interactive experience only adds to the greatness, only adds to it. And our albums being number one albums proves that. You don't need the visuals of our show in order to, you know, get snapped back to that emotional state. We play our show and we have visuals in our show because that's what a video game is, right? Video games live. That's why I named the show the way I did. There's three elements of a video game, important elements. There's the interactivity, you know, which is the gameplay and the storyline, you know, and then there's the visuals, which is the graphics, the animations, the motion, and then there's the sound. Those are the three things that make up a game. So I wanted to represent that in a live show, video games live. And, but, you know, do we need the visuals? Absolutely not. In fact, during our show, there's a couple of songs where I turn off the video and I say, and I'll explain to the audience, let's focus just on the musicians and on the music right now. And that's cool as well too. So yeah, absolutely. You know, it only adds to the greatness.
Let's talk about silence. I often experience that people around me are not used to remain silent, that there's a certain like necessity in our society to have a constant noise, like background noise in our life. Do you have that feeling as well? And what do you think that is?
Yeah, well, you know, for me personally, meditation is an important thing in my life, especially in the 21st century where there's always things hitting you from every angle. So, you know, meditating once or twice a day, you know, brings me back to my core. In music, to me, silence is a sound. Silence is a tool. Because as I had mentioned a little bit earlier before, melody is very important, the most important, but the second most important thing to me is dynamics, meaning volume, right? So in order to be grand and big, you have to be silent first. And then the other way around too, you know, in order to be, you want there to be something quiet, it would have had to have been big first and then you pull back. And so all the music that I write, I always try to incorporate big dynamics and then small. Dynamics, big, small, quiet, soft, big, but, you know, because that's you know, that's kind of stirring. Think of when you watch a film and a really powerful thing. So let's say there was an explosion happening, right? And let's say a building explodes. And there's constant noise and people screaming and there's fires and there's policemen and this and that. And then the building explodes. It's like, okay. Or there's tons of things going on screen, visceral. And then all of a sudden, shoop, they drop out all the sound and you see everything moving and you see all the cops and everything. Silence. Boom! That's much more powerful, right? Silence is powerful. Silence is a tool.
So let's ask the musician, the sound expert, what is the sound of silence?
It's a great song written by Simon and Garfunkel in 1968.
So I don't know how to continue after that perfect answer, but I'm going to try. The new Call of Duty, I don't know if you played it, if you heard it, Advanced Warfare. Yep. It features sequences with Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
They bought Kevin Spacey to act like Kevin Spacey in it. Do you think that one day there will be an Oscar for Best Video Game?
Well, there already is, kind of. Oh, you mean an Oscar in the Oscars? You know, the Oscars are for films. That's what it is, you know? So, you know, would video games ever get a Tony Award? That's the award for a musical. So the answer would be no. But we have one for a Grammy Award. So the Grammys is an album of music, a body of work. So that a video game can be in that category, but video games could never cross into the Oscars because that's just for motion pictures, right? So it's a different entertainment experience.
You as well would like draw the line?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. Because films aren't as cool as what we do.
When will it be an Olympic discipline, playing video games?
An Olympic? Oh, yeah, you know, I don't know about that. Yeah, a lot of, you know, there's the e-sports thing, you know. I know it's very popular around the world. But I don't know. To me, I don't see it as a sport as much as others might. To me, it's entertainment. And that's not to take away anything from the esports scene. It's unbelievable. I mean, in Korea and around the world, it's China. It's I watch these events and it's insane. So, you know, but sports to me is something that has some kind of physical activity in it. You know, running, hitting a ball, catching a ball, to that. So an electronic sport maybe, but I view that as more of a competition, not a sport, you know, if that makes sense. For example, I love backgammon. Backgammon is, you know, one of my favorite games that is un-video game, unrelated. but I wouldn't consider backgammon a sport. You know, it's a competition. Chess is a competition. But that's just me. I don't know.
If your life would be programmed into a one PC game, what would that game look like? How would you describe that game?
It would be a game about hope and dreams all coming true, because that's basically what my life, you know, has been. Hard work, you know. I had this dream as a very young child of doing music and again, the love for video games. And, you know, you'd be in the game, you'd be doing a lot of tasks, a lot of hard tasks, but the payoff would be amazing. The rewards, the treasure would be incredible. That's how I feel like I've lived my life.
And what music would we hear to that game?
Beethoven.
Obviously.
And which song do you want us to listen to at your funeral, the real one?
Yeah, probably... I love Barber's Adagio for Strings. That is, because it's the saddest piece of music ever written. I would like that played. And maybe Beethoven's Fifth as well. You know, dun 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 dun, dun 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 dun. You know, after the sad thing, I want people to, you know, then, but I want them to, you know, then remember me for who I was. We'll start out sad with, you know, Adagio for Strings. I don't know if you're familiar with that piece of music, but if you listen to it, you'll be in tears the first time you hear it. It's been used in a lot of movies, so you might know, you'll recognize it. And then, when they asked Beethoven what those notes were in his Fifth, you know, dun 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 dun, dun, they said, "What is that?" And Beethoven replied, "That's fate knocking on your door."
Tommy Tallarico, thank you very much for having been here. It was a great pleasure to us. So take care. Don't fall off the skateboard.
Exactly. Yeah. You want to see the scar? Look at that. Tony Hawk, pro skater right there. I got the marks to prove it.
Remarkable.
thank you for having me.
Band aus der Piratenstadt Mos Eisley vom Planeten Tatooine. Sie haben nur ein Lied. Das haben sie zu Gehör gebracht. Sie kennen die Band nicht? Star Wars, ihr Honks, aus dem ersten Film.
So, wenn ich als Außenstehender etwas aufnehme, dann gibt es immer das Paradox des Beobachters. Also ich bin da und ich bin eigentlich nicht Mitglied der Kultur.
Auf ihrer ewigen Sitzplatzsuche zwischen den Kultur- und Industriestühlen hat Lisa Meyer sich die Zeit und auf dem Studiohocker Platz genommen.
Mir will es so vorkommen, als ob
die Menschen vereidigt sind auf die Welt, wie sie ist.
YOLO!
Die ganze Sphäre der Unterhaltungsmusik ist so mit dem wahren Charakter, mit dem Amüsement, mit dem Schielen nach dem Konsum verbunden.
Mr. Lover, Lover, Lover. Mm.
Guten Abend, Lisa.
Guten Abend, Yannick. Guten Abend, Thibaut.
Salut, Lisa.
Läuft bei Ihnen?
Ja, alles gut. Vielleicht erwarten Sie inzwischen vielleicht schon meine obligatorische Einstiegsfrage. Ich möchte Sie auch dieses Mal nicht enttäuschen. Wie oft sind Sie in den letzten 3 Jahren umgezogen?
Letzten 3 Jahren, das ist also 2012.
2012,
richtig.
Ja, ja. Drei, vier.
Viermal,
doch so oft. Und dazu dann jetzt auch gleich noch eine weitere Frage. So ein Umzug ist ja immer anstrengend mit dem ganzen Möbeltransport und so. Wie haben denn Sie dieses Problem für sich gelöst mit den Möbeln?
Ich habe die Statistik 3-mal bereits möbliert und 1-mal eben Möbel gleich mitgenommen, also von zu Hause.
Ich habe bei jedem Umzug einfach immer weniger Möbel gehabt, die ich transportieren muss und am ehesten noch vor Ort irgendwelche Möbel mir gesucht.
Und wo haben Sie die Möbel dann gesucht? Haben Sie auch welche gekauft?
Ja, Flohmarkt und Ikea.
Und Sie, Thibaut?
Nur gebraucht.
Nur gebraucht.
Oder vor der Haustür gefunden.
Der Yannick, der hat mir jetzt das Stichwort nämlich gegeben. Ich wollte nämlich auf Ikea hinaus. Ich meine, wer hat nicht bei sich zu Hause dieses obligatorische Billigregal, so ein Lacktisch oder das Kallax-Regal oder...
Was für ein Regal?
Das Kallax-Regal. Das sind diese quadratischen Regale, die es in 18 oder keine Ahnung wie viele Fächern gibt. Haben Sie bestimmt schon mal gesehen mit so supermodischen Korbboxen. Aber zumindest hat bei sich jeder einfarbige Papierservietten von Ikea oder diese bekannten Teelichter-Säcke.
Was auch immer.
Genau. Aber Ikea ist eben meiner Meinung nach der Inbegriff von Kulturindustrie. Ikea kopiert Designermöbel, beziehungsweise nach offiziellem Statement gibt es einfach nur zufällige Ähnlichkeiten. Mhm. Die Designermöbel werden dann in großen Mengen produziert und vertrieben. Adorno schreibt dazu in seinem Resümee über die Kulturindustrie.
Die gesamte Praxis der Kulturindustrie überträgt das Profitmotiv blank auf die geistigen Gebilde.
Genau.
Ganz großartige Adorno.
Ja, ganz super.
Danke.
Genau, und diese geistigen Gebilde werden auf den Konsum durch Massen zurechtgeschnitten.
Lisa, okay, ist ja schön. Ich freue mich also, dass Sie da sind. So. Aber jetzt heulen Sie uns schon wieder die Ohren voll und bashen einfach nur irgendeinen großen Konzern, diesmal halt Ikea. Ja.
Jetzt warten Sie mal ab, Thibaut. Ich habe Ihnen diesmal ein bisschen was anderes mitgebracht. Nämlich die Seite IkeaHackers.net, die stellt sich nämlich gegen dieses schwedische Massenphänomen. Ikea ja, aber bitte mit einer großen Portion Individualität. IkeaHackers,
wunderbarer Versprecher.
Das ist schön. IkeaHackers ist eine Plattform, auf die jede und jeder seine gehackten Ikea-Möbel stellen kann.
Und Ikea damit necken kann. Also es sind dann zum Beispiel so Anleitungen, um irgendwie seinen Pax-Kleiderschrank zu verfeuern.
Jetzt und erklären Sie, Thibaut, und mir doch einmal, was man unter Möbelhacking verstehen kann.
Ich habe da Ihnen ein Fotobeispiel mitgebracht, nämlich den Grandma's Luck Laundry Trolley. Hier haben Sie mal das Foto. Vielleicht können Sie das mal den gewährten Zuhörern beschreiben.
Ja, okay, also das ist so ein Wagen, wie so ein, nicht ein Stubenwagen, weil das wäre für ein Kind, sondern es ist so ein Rollwagen, so ein Tisch eigentlich, wo man irgendwas draufstellen kann.
Erkennen Sie den Tisch auch wieder?
Das ist der Lack.
Genau, das ist der Lacktisch, dieser typische Lacktisch, quadratisch mit 4 Beinen. Die Leute kaufen also diese typischen Möbel bei Ikea und bauen sie um und stellen dann diese umgebauten Kunstwerke auf die Internetplattform Ikea Hackers. Ich habe Ihnen noch zur Veranschaulichung noch 2 andere Beispiele mitgebracht. Hier zum Beispiel dieser wunderbare Tisch, vielleicht können Sie das auch gerade beschreiben.
Das sind 2 wunderbare Babys und ein runder Ikea-Tisch.
Richtig.
Mit 2 Löchern drin ausgeschnitten und 2 Kindersitze untergebracht.
Genau. Also die sind da so richtig eingelassen drin. Die sind nicht dran gehängt, die Kindersitze, sondern sind in der Tischplatte eingelassen.
Und auch die Kinder sind eingelassen.
Auch die, ja, die Kinder, ja. Ich glaube, die kommen da nicht so schnell raus, ne?
Da hat der Vater sich einen Spaß draus gemacht und sehr praktisch zum Füttern. Gibt noch weitere Fotos, aber 1, denke ich, reicht.
Okay, jetzt mal Schluss. Und jetzt, warum? Warum zeigen Sie uns diese Beispiele?
Weil ich Ihnen dieses Mal etwas mitgebracht habe, das sich gegen die Kulturindustrie, also gegen die Massenware wehrt. Ikea Hackers startet sozusagen eine Mini-Revolution gegen die Kulturindustrie und stellt sich gegen die Einheitsmöbel und die Gleichschaltung von Wohnzimmereinrichtungen. aus dem Regal oder dem Tischchen, die in unzähligen Haushalten stehen, werden auf einmal individuelle, unverwechselbare Kunstwerke.
Aber das wird mir jetzt langsam ein bisschen unheimlich, wenn Sie so positiv darüber sprechen, Lisa. Das nehme ich Ihnen auch nicht ab.
Genau, inzwischen kennen Sie mich doch ganz gut, Thibaut. Und zwar hat die Seite Hackers einige Voraussetzungen an ihre User, zum Beispiel The Rule, wirklich, also in ganz großen Lettern auf der Seite geschrieben.
This is the only but most important requirement. The hack must involve at least one IKEA item hacked.
Genau, richtig. Außerdem ist eine weitere Voraussetzung, dass zu jedem Hack eine detaillierte Anleitung zum Nachbauen der Möbel vorliegen. Also worin besteht jetzt meine Kritik? Die Grundidee von IKEA-Hackers ist eigentlich ein Gegenentwurf zur Massenkultur sicherlich. Mhm. Diese Idee verliert aber meiner Meinung nach ihre Wirkungskraft, wenn sie gleichzeitig Anreize zum Konsum von IKEA-Möbeln gibt. Und um nochmal Adorno zu zitieren, was in der Kulturindustrie als Fortschritt auftritt, das unablässig Neue, das sie offeriert, bleibt die Umkleidung eines immer Gleichen.
Ja, okay, also klar, die User sind insofern wieder Konsumenten, weil sie einfach nur IKEA-Möbel kaufen und halt irgendwie was bisschen Cooleres draus machen, was halt nicht jeder im
Wohnzimmer hat. Ja, okay, sie sind zwar nicht ganz, also sind Konsumenten, aber vielleicht nicht ganz stumpf, weil sie ja trotzdem zu einem gewissen Grad, könnte man sagen, oder? Mhm. Sie müssen gerade einfach kreativ auch werden und auch so einen Anreiz bekommen, wirklich sich zu verwirklichen.
Das stimmt, weil sie sich jetzt aber bei ihrem nächsten Umzug fragen, wie sie sich à la Adorno individuell, ästhetisch und günstig ausstatten können, möchte ich Ihnen zum Schluss noch eine andere Seite ans Herz legen.
Ja, dann lade ich Sie ein, weil dann können Sie mir einfach einen Tisch bauen, oder? Das kriegen Sie bestimmt
hin. Ja, eben, dann, aber genau mit der Seite, die ich Ihnen jetzt vorstellen möchte, die macht nämlich alles anders als IKEA-Hackers. Und zwar den Blog hartz4möbel.blogspot.de des deutschen Architekts van Bole-Menzel. Und der stellt sein Projekt unter das Motto Build More, Buy Less, konstruieren statt konsumieren. Lemenzel stellt kostenlose Bauanleitungen für moderne und vor allem eben günstige Möbel zur Verfügung, die er als solche konzipiert hat.
Also daher der Titel, weil sie günstig sind. Hartz-IV-Möbel.
Genau, okay. Auch von 4.
Einfach nur, weil es günstige Möbel sind.
Richtig.
Also wir sind jetzt wieder zwischen zwei Stühlen, oder? Sehe ich das richtig? Sie wollen zum einen eben kostengünstige und individuelle Möbel. Und aber die, wenn man das nachbaut, diese Konstrukte von Herr Lemenzel, bleiben es ja doch wieder keine Unikate.
Mir geht es hier bei diesem Beispiel vor allem um die Idee, die dahinter steckt. Mhm. Nämlich ist The Rule auch sozusagen auf Hartz-IV-Möbel-Blogspot tatsächlich, dass man aus ganz einfachen Materialien sich selbst was baut, also aus Alltagsgegenständen, dass man sich davon inspirieren lässt und dann eben den Hammer und die Säge in die Hand zu nehmen und sich mit dem Produkt zu beschäftigen. Sich also mit dem Schwindel der Kulturindustrie zu entziehen und, um es jetzt nochmal abschließend mit den Worten Adornos zu sagen, entschieden, autonom und selbstständig zu handeln. Klar, der User hat am Ende dann die Wahl, ob er es einfach wieder nur nachbaut oder ob er tatsächlich eben Hammer und Nagel in die Hand nimmt und selber was baut und dann eben aber 100% IKEA-frei.
Das Tolle, Lisa, ist, dass Sie zwar immer zwischen zwei Stühlen sind, aber immerhin haben Sie so kreative Bauanleitungen, die irgendwie Ihnen zeigen, wie man da so einen Stoff dazwischen hängt, damit Sie immer nicht auf den Boden runterknallen.
Richtig. Genug geschmeichelt. Vielen Dank, liebe Kulturjournalistin Lisa Meyer. Geben Sie auf sich Acht und tschüss.
Das waren die Eagles of Death Metal, die Miss Elissa zum Besten gaben. Unser Beitrag zum Untergang des Abendlandes.
Könnte es denn sein, wenn Sie sagen, dass es sehr viele ökonomische Gründe auch hat? Weiß ich nicht, dass wir in 200 Jahren vielleicht alle Chinesisch sprechen?
Auch das ist mit einiger Sicherheit auszuschließen.
Gibt es eine bessere Zeit für die eingedampfte Essenz des Senders ohne Frequenz?
Klammer auf, Anführungszeichen. Zapping, das, Anführungszeichen, Klammer zu.
Zeit also für unsere subjektive Veranschaulichung dessen, was im vergangenen Monat genau hier auf den Detektor Bytes gesagt wurde. Der Verschnitt des Januarprogramms, wo die Zeichen standen auf Brot und Spiele. So sei es. What's in the box?
Ja, wissen Sie, manchmal ist es ja ganz gut, wenn man nicht weiß, was kommt und wie es wird, sonst würde man vielleicht von vornherein verzweifeln.
Willkommen, willkommen, willkommen.
Hallöchen, schön, dass ihr hier im Studio seid.
Fröhliche Hungerspiele. Und vor allem möge das Glück stets mit euch sein.
Und direkt die Frage, war früher denn alles besser?
Oh, ja, ihr steigt ja heftig ein hier. Ja, kann man so nicht sagen.
Schön, bevor wir beginnen, gibt es einen ganz besonderen Film. Speziell an euch direkt aus dem fernen Kapitol übersandt.
Alles analog.
Das ist nicht lustig.
Und alles sehr zerbrechlich und es geht immer kaputt, weil es halt alt ist und wir nicht so sensibel damit umgehen.
Findet ein Revival alter Mediengeräte statt?
Ja, Revival würde ich es jetzt nicht unbedingt nennen. Also Sony hat jetzt beispielsweise mal wieder einen Walkman auf der CES vorgestellt.
Ich glaube auch, es ist schon ein Stress irgendwie häufig auch. Also man will ja da noch hin und viel Zeit bleibt nicht und dann hört man da noch von einem anderen Laden und da muss man auch noch hin und irgendwann merkt man auch, dass das Geld langsam knapp wird, aber da stehen all die Platten rum und also...
Wir brauchen Hilfe bei der Sponsorensuche und Ratschläge.
Ah, okay. Akzeptiert die Perspektive des unmittelbar bevorstehenden Todes und wisset tief in eurem Herzen, dass ich rein gar nichts tun kann, um euch zu retten.
Hilfreich ist es nicht gerade.
Der Tag mit Holger Klein.
Schicker Schuss ist er.
Es gibt einen Verein aus Leipzig, der hält Journalisten von der eigentlichen Arbeit ab und legt den Alltag der öffentlich-rechtlichen Sender lahm. Sagen die Journalisten und die öffentlich-rechtlichen Sender. Oh, hallo Frau Müller.
Hallo.
Frau Müller, warum machen Sie das?
Das war Pflicht, nachdem eine riesengroße Petition, die 230.000 Leute mitgezeichnet haben, nicht als Kritik wahrgenommen wurde.
Was haben Sie getan, als du auf den Anfall geschossen hast?
Was für eine Petition war das?
Das war die Petition damals gegen diese Landsendung.
Was wäre, wenn nur ein Jahr? Was wäre, wenn keiner mehr zusehen würde?
Tun Sie aber alle.
Und wenn Sie nicht zusehen, wenn wir nicht zusehen?
Das wird nicht passieren.
Markus Lanz und, was hat er gemacht? Markus Lanz hatte Sarah Wagenknecht im Studio.
Wenn niemand zusieht, dann haben Sie keine Spiele mehr. So einfach ist das.
Und hat gemeinsam mit Herrn Jürges vom Stern die gute Frau da fertig gemacht.
Feuern Sie Ihre Favoriten an, weinen Sie, wenn Sie getötet werden, krank.
Und das hat ziemlich viele Leute aufgeregt, mich auch. Und deswegen ist diese Petition entstanden.
Gut, lach mich aus, bitte.
Ich lach dich überhaupt nicht aus.
Was hast du gesagt?
Raus mit Markus Lanz aus meinem Rundfunkbeitrag.
Genial! Genial!
Wie viele Beschwerden kommen da? So reicht da eine Beschwerde? Also einer, dem es nicht passt, dass seine Religion, also die Religion dieses Menschen nicht erwähnt wurde, sodass sie dann aktiv werden? Oder muss das schon sich häufen, dass sie sagen so, wir haben einen Schwellwert von 10 Beschwerden, ab dann werden wir aktiv?
Ich glaube nicht, dass wir es witzig finden, wenn die Spielmacher ihren Ärger auslassen.
Oh, an wem? An ihr? An ihm?
Nee, das war eine Beschwerde. Das war eine, wirklich.
Steffi, lockern Sie Ihr Korsett, nehmen Sie einen Drink. Um das sehen zu dürfen, hätte ich alles gegeben.
Sodele, das soll's gewesen sein. Unser Feiertagsprogramm. Wir sind am Schluss dieser Premium-Selektion aus dem The Other Side-Jahrgang 2015. Am Schluss des ersten Teils, denn, Yannick?
Wir kommen wieder mit einem zweiten Best-of-Teil am 9. Januar.
Uns bleibt noch der unendliche Dank an alle, die mit uns unterwegs waren in diesem Jahr auf der anderen Seite. Moritz Hartmann, Lisa Meyer, Manuel Fritsch, Colin Eberhardt, Isabel Schlegel.
Und die zweite Hälfte Name-Dropping-Tibo heben wir uns für den zweiten Teil des Best-ofs auf. Wir müssen nämlich los.
Recht haben Sie, Yannick. Geben Sie auf sich Acht. Kommen Sie gut rüber. Ich wünsche Ihnen allen ein hervorragendes Jahr. Lassen Sie es sich gut gehen und vergessen Sie nicht die einzige Maxime, die natürlich auch 2016 gilt, niemals, niemals locker lassen. Ciao.
Ciao.
Können wir nochmal? Ist das live gewesen jetzt gerade? Nein, okay, Entschuldigung.
Juhu.